ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
The Science Show is always full of surprises.
I just find it too hard to euthanize insects.
What about a mosquito in your bedroom at nighttime?
There are always exceptions.
What makes sex chromosomes so troublesome?
Sex chromosomes are very, very weird.
How human are you in terms of your genome?
At least 8% of us is not human in origin.
The Science Show, anytime on ABC Listen.
How do you win by a landslide and still look politically vulnerable?
Ask Keir Starmer.
Less than 2 years after Labour swept into office, Reform UK is surging in the polls.
And now Andy Burnham's name is being floated as Labour's future.
So is this just another turn of Britain's political cycle?
Or a sign that voters are looking for something fundamentally different? I'm Kylie Morris.
And I'm Latika Berg.
This is Global Roaming.
Kylie, it's D-Day in the UK. Voters in Makerfield are going to the polls in a by-election, but it's not just any by-election.
No, all eyes on this historic by-election, shall we call it that, in Makerfield. I mean, this is a place just outside of Manchester, west of Manchester. It's a former coal mining town, but now more suburban commuter belts. 98% British-born, white. It's been a Labour seat since 1904. But now these voters get to decide whether or not to send the Mayor of Greater Manchester, Andy Burnham, to the lower house in Westminster. And why would it matter that Andy Burnham should go to the lower house in London, Latika?
Because he would very quickly be stepping across the road into number 10 Downing Street. That is the expectation. But look, this is a wild, wild situation in British politics. We literally have a prime minister elected with a near historic landslide 2 years ago, now being challenged by an outsider, the so-called King of the North. You cannot get more Game of Thrones than this. This guy is going to come down on his cavalry from Manchester, save London, save the Labour Party from itself and its demise, and try and fend off an outside insurgent populist uprising in Nigel Farage. I mean, it is an amazing script, but boy, oh boy, there's a lot at stake.
They are very big expectations though, aren't they? I mean, is it realistic to imagine that a figure like Andy Burnham can turn this all around for Labour?
I have bad vibes about this, I have to say. I remember very well everybody saying, look, if we just got rid of Boris, we would have a competent Tory government again. And then look what happened. It just set off this accelerated turmoil and instability that you could very well say is just a continuum. But I do think there are also deeper structural problems underway here, and it's not just about personalities. As much as this contest is being framed around the personality of Andy Burnham, who's a very charismatic, good, clear communicator, compared to Keir Starmer, who's this dour, dense, dry, to many people, an unlikable figure in a prime minister.
So our guest today is Rob Ford. He's a professor of political science at the University of Manchester. He's also written a number of books. He's the co-author of Brexit Land and Sex, Lies and the Ballot Box. He's got some great up-to-date analysis for us. Here's that conversation. Rob Ford, welcome to Global Roaming.
Pleasure to be here.
Rob, how important is this by-election in Makerfield, not only for Andy Burnham, but for who becomes the future Prime Minister of the UK?
The fact we're asking that question illustrates why this is a very unusual by-election. There's never been a by-election like this when the vacancy has been explicitly created in order to enable somebody to run for Parliament so that they can challenge the incumbent Prime Minister, which incidentally creates a really strange campaign scenario in which essentially what the voters of Makerfield are being asked to do is vote Labour in order to get rid of the incumbent Labour Prime Minister, which is a kind of a strange campaigning psychology. But, I mean, they've been calling it, the British press, the by-election of the century. It is. There's never been a by-election like this where everybody knows that if one candidate wins, it will probably mean a change of leader at the very top of government quite soon after. The whole shape of the current five-year British Parliament, it all hinges on what happens this week in Makerfield.
So how many voters are there in Makerfield?
It's about 70,000 voters. All constituencies in the UK are roughly the same size. We had boundary changes quite recently, so they're more evenly sized than usual. So it's about 70,000.
So that's a pretty curious kind of democratic proposition then, isn't it? That you've got 70,000 people potentially deciding on who the next Prime Minister of Britain is.
Yeah, I mean, it is. But then that partly reflects the nature of a parliamentary system. You know, every MP, every prime minister has to be an MP as well. But normally, they run to be an MP in a general election and, you know, they're running as party leader. What we've never had is this scenario of somebody basically saying, get me into Westminster so I can become prime minister. And incidentally, the reason that has to happen is, and it's not actually even a formal constitutional rule, because in Britain, obviously, we don't have formal constitutions. It's like the Pirates Code, you know, it's all just norms and conventions. And the norm and convention is that the prime minister has to be sitting in the House of Commons. So Andy Burnham isn't a current MP because he's currently mayor of Greater Manchester. He's the most popular Labour politician in polling. So once a lot of people in the Labour Party decided they wanted to get rid of Keir Starmer, who's now the most unpopular Labour Prime Minister in polling history, he was an obvious candidate. But then you have to get him into Parliament in order to make that a going proposition. And they tried to do this, and Burnham tried to do this in February in another Manchester seat, and Andy Burnham was blocked by the National Party from running. Basically told that the Labour Party thought it was wrong to have an expensive and distracting by-election for his mayoral post, which you would have to have if he got into Parliament. 4 months later, and they didn't block him. They said, fine, you go ahead. What changed in the interim? We had a big set of local and devolved elections here where Labour got an absolute hammering, a once-in-a-lifetime hammering, which I think brought home to a lot of people in the Labour Party that if they don't change course very soon, they are like the captain of the Titanic heading towards an iceberg. So they decided, right, who's as has been said a lot in our British political discourse, who's the best soccer player available to us? The World Cup's on. Andy Burnham's our top man in all the polling, so we've got to get him on the Westminster pitch. And that's what's brought us to where we are today.
Rob, is it a fait accompli that if Burnham wins, he becomes the Prime Minister? And is it just a change in style? Would it mean more substantial changes in the government and fundamentally the rewiring of the British state if he were to win?
Well, to take the first part first, it's not entirely a fait accompli, assuming he wins this week. Burnham himself has been playing it very coy. People keep asking him, are you going to challenge immediately? Are you going to challenge immediately? He doesn't give a straight answer. The rumours behind the scenes, in terms of all the shadowy briefing that we get in events like this, is that he would like some sort of an orderly, uncontested transition, essentially a coronation rather than a contest. But that's not entirely within his hands. It depends on how Keir Starmer reacts to the situation. Does he bow out quietly or does he want to fight? It depends on what other rivals in the House of Commons decide they want to do. And it depends in particular on what MPs decide to do. Because if enough MPs decide to back an alternative challenger, then we have a contest that can potentially run for several months over the summer when Labour Party members will then get to decide which of the contenders goes on to be leader and PM. So it's not a done deal that he'll get it for sure. However, the other challengers can all read the polling too, and they can see that as things stand, both voters in general and Labour members massively prefer Burnham at the moment to anybody else, which is one of the things that suggests it might all fall into place quite quickly. And then in terms of what it would mean for government, it would, for one thing, definitely mean a change of style. One of the defining features of the Starmer government has been that Keir Starmer has proved to be a really very poor communicator in most of the modern forms of communication that politicians need to be fluent in. And as a result, voters have decided two things about him. One is they don't know what he stands for, but two, whatever it is that they think he stands for, they don't like it. So he's really very unpopular. Whereas Andy Burnham is a very impressive communicator, has been for years. That's the reason he has a national profile, despite only being a regional mayor. So we'll see a change in style. On substance, probably yes as well. As a regional mayor, Burnham is quite keen on the idea of devolving power. I mean, Australia has much more of a federal system where much more of the power resides in the states. Britain's system is very centralised, and some people in politics think that's the source of a lot of dysfunction and a lot of unrest. He's definitely a bought-into believer in devolution. That's one area we may see change. Another area is electoral reform. We still have first-past-the-post electoral system in Britain. We now have very fragmented politics that can produce very chaotic elections. And he's a long-standing supporter of electoral reform. And the final area is the traditional bread-and-butter business of how big should the government be and how much tax should everybody pay. The general impression, or at least the vibe that he gives off, is that Burnham is a little bit more to the left on that kind of thing, going to be keener on, big government spending programs, maybe people having to pay a bit more tax as well. But he's been playing it very careful in terms of how he frames all of that. He hasn't committed to anything big or specific yet, so we'll just have to wait and see.
Robert, just to follow on from that question from Latika. I mean, I guess even if he has this kind of charming personality as the mayor and a degree of popular kind of support that certainly Keir Starmer doesn't enjoy, he's still going to face exactly the same challenges as Keir Starmer does, certainly in terms of taking on populism and the threat of Nigel Farage. How is he placed? What do we know about his history in terms of how he will bring the fight to reform, which Labour has to do, doesn't it?
Yeah, they do. I mean, for one thing, if Burnham is even in Westminster, he will have already provided one demonstration of his ability to take the fight to reform in a way that Keir Starmer has been failing to do, because the seat he's running in is a seat where every single electoral ward elected a reform councillor last month. And currently the polling suggests that an awful lot of the people who voted reform just a few weeks ago are going to switch over to voting for Burnham. Plus, he's combined, and this is going to be very important under our electoral system, he's pulled in all the voters from the smaller left parties. We have like the Greens, the Lib Dems, we have a bunch of smaller left parties in this country. A lot of voters have been leaking from Labour to those smaller parties because of discontent with Starmer. Burnham seems to be capable of reuniting them all. That is also a key element in the fight against reform. The paradox that someone like Burnham faces, because we don't have ranked choice voting like you guys do, is he needs to get the votes back from the left and get some vote back from the right as well if he's going to win. So that's what he'll be aiming to do. And his track record as mayor, electorally speaking, suggests that he is a very effective politician in terms of appealing to the voters. He's won every single election in Greater Manchester by very large margins, outperformed most of the other mayors. But the big question is, does all of that translate to Westminster? Because his big pitch as mayor has often been, I'm the champion of the little guy against a distant government that doesn't listen, which isn't so far away from the kind of thing that radical right populists like to say. But when you are the big guy at the centre of a distant government, you can't really pitch yourself in that way anymore and make it credible. So he's going to have a different challenge on his hands.
I'm Kylie Morris. I'm here with Latika Burke on Global Roaming, and we're speaking with author, Professor of Politics at Manchester University, Rob Ford. He's giving us, I guess, insights into the mood of the British electorate and whether or not it's possible that Andy Burnham may well become the Prime Minister of the UK.
Rob, the resignation last week of John Healey as Defence Secretary, it seemed to change the dynamic a little. It feels like anyone vying for the leadership now does have to show some pretty serious credentials on defence and national security. How do you think any of the candidates will fare on that front. And do you think that John Healey has opened up himself a candidacy that might not have been there before?
Yeah, the Healey resignation really came out of nowhere and surprised a lot of people. Healey's been a very loyal player in the cabinet. He isn't regarded as particularly factional individuals, not being publicly critical of Starmer or anything like that. And the fact that he's gone, we currently have a big defence review going on. It's recommended big increases in defence expenditure. What seems to have happened is that John Healey has said, I need more money for defence and I need it now. Rachel Reeves has said, well, you can't have it. Keir Starmer has then gone around to all the spending departments and said, well, can you cut your budget so we can increase defence spending? They've said no. And then he's gone back to Healey and said, you can't have the money, and Healey's resigned. And what you can see is the common thread underlying that particular round the houses is Keir Starmer's authority is shot to bits. He can't get anybody to do what he's asking them to do. They just refuse. So that, I think, speaks again to the point of why we might get quite a rapid transition. In terms of what the other candidates will do, we don't entirely know what Healey's motives were. He is incidentally not the first defence secretary to wave the bloody shroud in terms of wanting lots more money for defence and saying it's really awful. This is a standard part of Whitehall negotiations. People have pointed this out that, you know, there are plenty of other defence secretaries who've made similar howls of pain, but few have been in a position to resign at a timely moment to make clear they have leverage. So I think it will be a very tricky and important negotiation for Burnham or for any other leadership contender to figure out how to put out that fire, because historically, defence is a weak spot for Labour. They don't want to appear weak on defence. They don't want to appear weak on national security. But this brings us also back to that broader point that any new Prime Minister is going to be operating within some very serious constraints. The British economy is not growing. The British public debt is very large. The British government has ruled out in its manifesto 2 years ago a lot of the main tax increases, and Burnham has incidentally recommitted to those. So, you know, as one of our, I think, I mean, we've now been through quite a few prime ministers in the last few years, but one from a few years ago, Theresa May, once said, there is no magic money tree. So, you know, if you want more money for defence, where's it going to come from? That's going to be the kind of difficult, you know. It's appropriate, really, that a new PM has a decision as difficult as that to do very early on, because that's the nature of the job. Lots of difficult decisions like that.
What is the prospect of an early election?
Well, I have learned over the years not to make too many confident predictions in British politics, because it's a very uncertain business. We've had a series of pundits, in fact, have to eat their hats on TV because they've made statements of the form, I will eat my hat if the following thing happens, and then it duly happens. All of that said, I would be very, very surprised if there was an early election for two reasons, really. Firstly, the new Labour leader will inherit an exceptionally large parliamentary majority, an exceptionally dominant position in Parliament. It is very unlikely that any election, even if it went well for them, would deliver such a strong position. So the only way would be down. But secondly, given both the volatility in the polling in the last couple of years and the experience of the previously mentioned Theresa May, there would be a lot of worry that if you called an early election, you'd end up going down just next to Liz Truss's name as one of the shortest serving prime ministers in British history, because it could backfire on you horribly and you could lose. Burnham could indeed lose his own seat, having just regained it. So I think it is a very unlikely outcome, because the risks are very large, the downsides are very obvious. And what's the upside? The upside is a couple more years in Parliament with a much worse parliamentary position. That isn't even necessarily going to enable you to get more done than you could do in 3 years with a very strong parliamentary position.
Rob, what do you think this says about British politics? Have we entered a permanent state of crisis and instability? Because I think many people watching the last landslide election would have thought that is Labour, safe as houses until they call the next election. What we're seeing is a mirror of what the Tories did in government with a sizeable majority, and then, of course, the lesser one under Theresa May. Why do you think these currents are happening in British politics?
I mean, the short answer is a kind of long Brexit. You know, so we've had long COVID in Britain. We've got long Brexit, essentially. We had the EU referendum almost exactly 10 years ago now. And that ended up disrupting our political landscape in a very lasting way, because it created these two new tribes of voters, Leave voters and Remain voters. And that fracture over the EU referendum, it cut straight across the traditional dividing lines that defined Labour and Tory. And that's made for a very kind of unstable political environment ever since, because neither Labour nor the Conservatives can win without, to some extent, straddling, bridging that divide. But doing so proves to be really untenable, particularly in government. The Conservatives lost the Remain vote hand over fist in the last election to the Liberal Democrats. They've now lost the Leave vote to Reform. The Labour election victory was never as dominant as it looked in terms of Commons seats, because it was a win in a very fragmented environment. Again, our electoral system played a really crucial role. But there was a central contradiction in the message of Labour in that general election campaign. If you go back and look at all the campaigning material, it's all got just one word printed on it, change. And lots of pictures of Keir Starmer and the word change next to them. It's very, very clear. Exactly. It was very clear what they were arguing for. Vote for us and things will change. And people did and believed that promise. But in that manifesto, you would see, if you read the fine print, like the real sort of political junkies were doing, they were ruling out all the big tax changes that they could make that would actually finance big, ambitious change. So if you look closely, you know, it's like those finance product adverts, you know, here's this amazing deal. Just don't read the fine print. You'll realise it's not as good as it looks. People now have had 2 years to read the fine print and they've realised that they've been conned, which is why they feel very angry with the Labour government, because they're not getting the change that they were promised. And the parties that keep destabilising the system keep being the ones who promise radical change. Voters then elect them. It's the same with Johnson, incidentally. And then they can't deliver radical change under the current system because of all the constraints that are on offer. So either someone in politics has to find a way to actually deliver radical change, or at least frame what they're doing as a down payment on radical change, or they need to find a way to persuade voters that radical change is either not possible or not desirable. Until one of those two things happens, I think we're going to keep going through this sort of tumble dryer of politicians. In they go, spin around for a while, and then get thrown out. I mean, we're up to about 7 or 8 prime ministers in the last decade, I think now, whatever it is. I've lost count. But it used to be, when I was growing up, Italy, it was the running joke that they get through like 3 or 4 prime ministers every parliamentary term. Now it's us that are doing it.
Rob Ford, thanks so much. I mean, I guess by week's end, we'll know whether or not Andy Burnham is in the lower house, but there are still lots of other steps to follow before he does. He's got to get the support of 81 MPs, hasn't he, in order to become leader. So there's still a little bit of work to be done. And of course, lots of parallels here, because Pauline Hanson, who is the leader of One Nation, is now also talking about trying to find herself a lower house seat in order to be potentially in a stronger position when it comes to national leadership. So, yes, we really appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
So that was Rob Ford, who's a professor of political science at the University of Manchester. Fascinating, Latika. I should just add, we were talking about the fact that he would require the support of 81 MPs if it were to go to a contest. But as Rob explained earlier on, it won't necessarily go to a contest, right? Starmer could see what's coming and decide to step aside.
He could, although he's given no indication of that. I mean, every day he stands up saying, I'm going to fight on, I'm going to continue. This is out of duty, it's not out of vanity. That was his latest line last week, Kylie. And he does seem very, very determined to stick it out. I think a really interesting contrast here is with Anthony Albanese. People forget now, but in the first term, after the PM in Australia went with the voice referendum and lost, you know, the talk was he was tanking. The talk was Peter Dutton could win the next election. Anthony Albanese was given a lot of time to be a mediocre performer before he actually went on to win his landslide at the last election. I don't know if the Labour Party in the UK will give Keir Starmer the same amount of time to be very ordinary in the job before maybe finding his feet. This week, Kylie, I was at Downing Street for his Monday morning press conference where he announced his social media ban. And I have to say, out of all the times I've seen Keir Starmer perform, he was in very good spirits, really sprightly. He had a little bit of a back against the wall, I'll come out fighting spirit in him. I don't think it's necessarily enough, but it was very interesting to see that change in him.
I mean, you know, you're based there, you live there, you know the kind of minutiae of British politics far better than I do. Do you have a sense that Andy Burnham could be the future? I mean, my sense is that Andy Burnham belongs to a Labour of the past, and I wonder how sustainable it is. You know, you can just change Keir Starmer for the sake of changing, but how healthy an investment is Andy Burnham for British left-wing politics?
I mean, that is the very question, Kylie, all these Labour MPs are tossing up. Yes, Andy Burnham is, as Rob was saying, the most popular Labour figure publicly and across UK society. He is certainly a darling of the Labour left, but he is not a darling of the Labour movement full stop. I mean, there is a reason why Keir Starmer is a centrist, safe pair of hands. You know, he looks a bit like Kevin Rudd did when he came in promising to be John Howard Light. That's the shtick Keir Starmer has gone for very deliberately, because middle of the road is what Labour needs to be electorally viable. And remember, in the UK, Labour barely wins government. It's an oddity. It's a rarity. It is not like in Australia. So these guys are at risk of blowing up the entire show the one time they get it in generations. To answer your question, there are a lot of MPs who are very sceptical about where Burnham takes them. They think he's loose. They think he's high risk. Yes, he has the magnetism. Yes, there is every single chance he's the guy that can beat Farage where other leaders don't. But what if the costs are higher than the result? What if along the way he blows up, implodes? What if his fiscal discipline is not great? And what if he roils the markets, which is what happened to Liz Truss? There's a lot of these undercurrents that are just cautioning. I do wonder whether too many MPs when it comes to the crunch. But Kylie, we will know a lot more this time next week.
And just to draw on one other comment by Rob, which I found really informative. So that cautionary tale of promising change and not delivering, which has really hampered Keir Starmer. I do wonder, how does Andy Burnham come into the slipstream of that promise and be the guy who does deliver the change, given that they've already given away lots of their levers for change, particularly in the form of tax reform?
Yeah, Kylie, I mean, this is exactly why I asked Rob the question about an early election. There are many MPs who think that will be on the cards, and I myself am not quite sure. I think there's a lot of reasons for Burnham to continue with the majority he's got, but he may find that majority quite unruly. And if he does want to do some big rewiring of the British state, which is the only reason to move to him, he may need a mandate. And then it's really, really high risk, because Nigel Farage and Reform are polling really well at the moment.
Look, if you have any thoughts on that conversation with Rob Ford, I should mention too, he's written a couple of great books, particularly Brexit Land and Sex, Lies and the Ballot Box, if you want to learn more about some of his analysis and thoughts on British politics. Don't forget to write to us. We love your questions and feedback, so please keep it coming. Our email, of course, is global.roaming@abc.net.au.
Thank you, Kylie, and thanks to our producers, Rebecca Metcalf and supervising producer Kylie Gray. We'll be back with you tomorrow with an episode about how Australia can step up to care for our oceans with renowned international oceans expert Terry Garcia. See you, Kylie.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.